are going to be limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Please step up to the speaker's podium and clearly state your name and address and spell your last name for the record. If any member of the board wishes to extend the length of your presentation, this can be done either by myself or by a majority vote of the board. Anybody want to talk? Victoria.
Yeah. This is just a little handout to pass it down just because it's only 5 minutes, so that way you guys can read along as I go here. Okay. So the first thing, I was reading all the things in that Dr. Reiser had put on the website with all the letters, the nice letters that came in from the district, from across the community, basically, about the district and Dr. Reiser. I think that's awesome that we get really good feedback from the community, and I think Dr. Reiser, the strength of Dr. Reiser is truly his ability to go into the community and build partnerships. He does that well. Okay. But as well, you also have to be a leader within the organization. That's kind of where we've had the issues, and that's where I've been going around and talking to people and writing some emails to discuss the issues that are internal as well. And when you go out and you talk to community partners, I also think you don't necessarily know the community in which you're actually serving. You really have to go out there. You have to rely on your people who are out there every day to feed you back that information of what those community people that we serve actually need. So I think you just can't talk with community partners. I also think you have to be here and be present in Las Vegas. I don't feel that Dr. Reiser spends a lot of time here in Las Vegas. I'm not sure about that. But since I've been here over at the Valley View building, I don't think I've seen him here 5 days a week since I've been here. But so the second thing, which is what I gave you, which is from our strategic plan. And it just came out, and this is the final draft of that. And it's got some really interesting things in there, particularly under the values. Values, one thing we should really value is our employees. It's the number one service we provide is what we give personally as an employee. But if you look at this, all of those things under values are things that we do for the community. It has nothing addressing anything about within internally. When we talk about people and we treat people with professional, courteous, prompt manner, we don't do that within the district, but we expect to do that in the community. Under health, we'll craft and implement all programs, services, and regulations with the overarching goal of promoting the health of the community we serve. That's great, but we don't do that internally. We are not prepared for any outbreak of Ebola. We've done a lot of work on talking to the community and the other hospitals and stuff. To this day, there has not been a single person who has gotten their protective equipment or the training on how to use it if we ever got it. We aren't being tested for TB appropriately. We finally did because OSHA came in. Environmental Health is not having their fit testing done for their masks to use in case an outbreak were here. It would take, I worked it out, over 50 hours to fit test all those people if something happened and it were an outbreak. So I don't think we're taking care of internally the health of our employees. Integrity. We'll favor fairness and honesty in order to consistently apply all codes, rules, and regulations. I've already talked to you on that. We don't feel that that is happening appropriately. Knowledge. We'll commit to share thorough information with our clients and stakeholders. The lines of communication will be open for receiving feedback in order to constantly improve and enhance our operations. Knowledge is really important, and it's really good that we should have an open ability to share that knowledge. To have that with internally, you have to actually believe that those employees have some knowledge, and Dr. Reiser has in the past told us we are not the best and the brightest. You can't disvalue the employees and disregard what they have to say. Excellence, based on evidence-based research and best practices, we provide competent service and make available to all of our clientele our benefits of our resources in order to provide superior long-term performance. Right now, we have been downsizing everything that we do, so I don't know how we can go and do superior long-term service. Consideration, and I think this is the most important, that we will create an environment that recognizes and respects diversity and allows people to express their concerns without intimidation. Addressing the needs and problems of our patrons will be a priority for all staff members. Well, it should be a priority to take care of us within, that we shouldn't have intimidation going on, and we shouldn't have to worry And Dr. Eiser has very famously said, the difference between carrots and sticks, we're to use carrots in the community. I have never seen Dr. Eiser use a carrot with anyone here. It has been sticks over and over and over again for 2 years. Our directors do an awesome, awesome job of being able to take that negativity, turn it around, and bring it down to the employees in a positive manner. And that is what's helping us, and you can see that in the survey. Those directors that are really able to turn that around and take care of their employees versus those people who can't. And the very last thing, Dr. Eiser used a stick on me once. That is the very last page of there. We have the resolution that is done. And so I put that in there. And I put that in there because, not for me, I didn't care about it for me, but I did care about it for the collateral damage that happened that day of the other employees, and I did it based off of them. We went to the EMRB, we sat there, we discussed it, Dr. Eiser did not show, and we talked about it with lawyers, and that's what we came up with, which to me was unacceptable. That's it.
Anybody else?
Good morning, my name is Maureen Clark, and I cannot believe what I just heard. I really can't. I didn't even recognize my place of employment. You're hearing one side of the story. You haven't heard the other side. There are employees that are trying really super hard to make this a wonderful place to work in. Dr. Eiser has gone above and beyond to help the employees. I'm part of an employee events committee. He has granted us time with management to get together, form cohesion, and bring in, raise morale. And that has been a really a good, positive thing. Dr. Eiser gets in there once a month or twice a month and helps us sell popcorn, hot dogs, whatever it takes. He's been part of it. He has an open door policy. I've gone in unannounced, knocked on the door, said, Dr. Eiser, can I ask you a question? He's always been there. I don't know where people get off that he is not available to anyone. He's a busy man, I understand that. He's trying to get this place back in order. It's not fair. When he came in, we had a horrible, horrible administration. He was trying to clean up his act, and right off the bat, they formed opinions about Dr. Eiser, and they wanted him to fail from the very beginning. As far as I know, the nurses that I've talked to, and not only the nurses, but some of the employees, were handed a petition and said, here, sign it. I said, what am I signing? I read it. I said, I don't understand that. What is the problem here? What? That managers are going to be called chief nurses, and there's no director of nurses. I thought they were the same. They have the same job duties, only you may have a position with a person that's called a director, and you have managers. Well, the managers might be, chief nurses. I don't know. All I know is that, to me, it's the same thing. We have a voice. All people have to do is keep an open mind. Go to management, talk to Dr. Eiser, he'll listen. You may not like what he has to say, or maybe there's a reason why he tells you what he has to say, but give him the opportunity. I don't like this bashing. We're supposed to be working as a team. If there are bad people that work in this place, it's only because management put him there in the first place. He's trying to clean up the house. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Noreen. Anybody else?
My name is Ellen Spears. I've actually met with a couple of you recently, and I've been here at the health department since 1982, full time since 1987. I don't know the bashings or any of that. I think we're all here to do public health. Put that in our forethoughts, in our jobs. Being a native Las Vegan, my parents came here in 1957. I love this town. I love what it has to offer. being a public health official here at SNHD, I have my concerns. I have so many concerns that after 29 years of service, I'm going to buy out my last year. The resources I've obtained in 30 years, I'm taking with me. I'm not going to give any more blood. And that's what I feel like I've been doing the last couple of years. Be as it may, I hope somewhere in this scene we can find resolution so that we can move forward and protect the public health of this community. With that, we need human resources. That's your first line of defense. Human resources. Whether they feel good or bad, you know, that's for everybody to figure out. I personally don't feel good anymore. I know everybody's trying to do a good job, but I'd like to remind everybody, we're civil servants. We serve our community, not ourselves first. We don't take 2.5% pay raises over the backs of overtime. We're civil servants. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, we will close agenda item one, public comment. And there's one change on the agenda, committee members, which is on 3 sub 2. That agenda item will be asking us to approve the minutes of the September 18th, 2014 CHO Annual Review Committee meeting, rather than the September 14th, 2014 meeting. With that correction, I would take a motion to accept the agenda as published.
Motion to accept.
Mr. Chair,
a
question.
Yes, ma'am.
In the future, we should have the thing posted out front that this is where we were meeting, normally like we do at the board meetings. I was wandering around, so I apologize for being a few minutes late. I assumed it was in a different place.
I did my wandering around a few minutes before you.
Thank you.
I understand. Is there a second? Do we need a second?
Yes.
We need a second. We have a second. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Agenda item 3 sub 1, the nomination of chair of the Chief Health Officer Annual Review Committee. Any nominations?
So, who you?
Second.
This sounds like a railroad train or cannot be stopped. So we've had a motion and a second for me to be the chair of the Chief Health Officer Annual Review Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes, oddly enough, unanimously. Second item under agenda item 3 is to approve the minutes of the September 18th, 2014 CHO Annual Review Committee meeting. It seems, I know, committee like just yesterday. Any changes or additions or deletions?
Except as amended.
I have a question. At item 4, it says approved recommendations to be made to the Southern Nevada District Board of Health's 24th meeting, which we don't have now. But is that assumed, or is that the contract changes that we're being asked to consider?
You're referring to the agenda, so that people know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, sorry. Thank you. Yeah, item 4 on the agenda page. I just wanted to clarify.
Yes.
It says approved recommendations made to the board of, and we're not having a meeting now on the 24th.
We're not going
to
have that meeting. And are we going to have another meeting faster, or are we going to wait?
Yeah, I wrote you yesterday because you're as the chairman, to and gave you some dates that Jackie had found that we could do it. And once you approve any of those dates or disapprove, then we would query the entire board. All and right. I think we're looking at the week of
October 5th.
October 5th.
Okay. I am not available for anything other than the 9th.
Yeah, and that was one of the dates we had, was the 9th, and then a couple of dates the following week as well.
What time are we going to start it?
Jackie,
I have to pull up the email with the dates, but I'll give them to you.
So while you look at that, then my other question was going to be, is that assumed that that's the contract that we've been given in the agenda?
Yes, I think that's correct.
It doesn't say
that
very clearly, and I don't know that we always just recommend a contract change before we've even had the evaluation. So. Since we're going to have another board meeting, maybe that should be cleared up, because it doesn't say anything. Approved recommendations, what does that mean?
Let's find out.
Okay.
going to be if it's still not clear.
The
I'm good after 9:30 on the 9th. So I can do like 10 o'clock on the 9th.
I'm good. Back from vacation. I'll be ready to go.
How do you all feel about Fridays?
I will be out of town.
Sure.
Normally I would meet, but I'm going to be out of town with family that weekend. You don't need me to make
Let's see what you get.
And that's 10-9 after 10 a.m.? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the next step would then be to query the full board to see if we can get, if Jackie can get a quorum.
Get a quorum, yep.
The other dates were 10, 12, and 10, 13.
At 10 o'clock?
10, 12, or 10, 13 in the morning.
Okay.
At the regular 8:30 time.
My normal scheduling helper is
yes.
in Disneyland. The real one.
Okay. And we apologize for the mix-up for tomorrow. Believe me, if there's anyone who would like tomorrow to go by, it's me. But it was just an issue with the website posting, not with any other posting.
Okay. All right. So we are sitting on a motion to approve the minutes to the last meeting, I think. Is that
yes.
correct still? And we have had a motion. We have had a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those minutes are approved.
For the record, that's with the change that you
noted
earlier.
September 14, 2014. And 3.3, receive and discuss the CHO report of accomplishments and discuss proposed goals for the next review period. Dr. Eiser.
This is really an opportunity for me to do two things. One is to talk to you about some of the goals that you have laid out for me and actually amended at the last either CHO or full board meeting, and to give you an update on those and to talk about accomplishments. And I think they're pretty self-evident. The second thing that this is an opportunity for you to do is to look out, to look on starting the page 4, and look at what's been going on within the various divisions. So we have some accomplishments of all of those divisions. Of course, you've heard about those over the course of the last 2 years, really, but over the course of the last year for these particular goals in terms of the grants, in terms of budget, in terms of meetings that we've had, in terms of a whole variety of things. So I hope you, if you haven't had time to read those because that gives me an opportunity to brag about both my division directors, their managers, their supervisors, but the staff who really get this done. In addition, going back to the first thing is I can't do that without all of the people working with me to accomplish those goals, or to accomplish those things. So I certainly can't take credit for all of them. I can't balance the budget by myself. I have to have Sharon, who is our finance officer, Andy, who works as her supervisor, and all the people involved in finance to be able to do that. But not only that, I can't balance the budget without the input from all of the divisions, holding down costs, holding down overtime, holding down travel. So obviously that's not me that does it, although I set the tone and I set the direction. In addition, I'm not going out and doing TB testing myself. So when you look at the accomplishments from last year and the TB situations that we had then and the one that we've had in this last year, it's my staff who step up and go out and do the testing, review it. Again, I have the tenor. I ask them to use the incident command system so that when we have something like the exercise next week, that will be a 2.5-day exercise with all of the jurisdictions, fire, and our partners throughout the valley, that we're able to step up and fit into and use the incident command system. So I'm not here to brag a lot, but I do think you need to understand that despite the budget issues and the other issues we've had over the last 2 years, your district really has done, I think, an outstanding job. As you know, I've worked for three other health departments or districts in my career, and I had a 24 and a half year, as we were talking about at the beginning, a 24 and a half year career with the U.S. Public Health Service, with the last one being a commission officer with the Food and Drug Administration, where I got a significant amount of environmental health experience myself. And none of us who are in the service can take credit for anything without referring to our colleagues, our supervisors, and really the staff that work for us. I don't know if, sir, you'd like me to go into more detail, but that's my not quite prepared, but semi-prepared statement. If you want to talk...
I was a little disappointed to not see listed in the environmental health accomplishments getting the chair of the board a health card.
Ah. Well, you know, I was going to make a joke, but people will think I'm being serious.
I have not yet used this professionally, so I prepared...
And, you know, I might bring this up at the full board meeting, but you and I had a discussion this last month about pasteurization. And I think that health card, while you didn't get training in pasteurization to get the health card, you very clearly understood all of the concepts that both Jackie and her staff and I sent to you. So that's really helpful to have you do that.
Committee members, any questions at this point?
I have one for you. What do you get to do with that health card?
I can serve you a drink.
After 10?
We take a break.
Actually, I don't have a TAM card, so I'm not sure if I can serve you a drink. I can serve you a burrito.
And I think you could work in a kitchen, too.
I do want to follow up on the health cards, because that's been an issue for many years. So who all do you still require to have a health card?
May I ask Jackie to talk to that? Please. And identify yourself as that every meeting.
Jackie Restar, Director of Environmental Health. We require everyone that's handling food to have a food handler's card at this time.
Okay, and those are the ones that we did the tests at PBS for folks to be able to do them in different languages and so forth.
Absolutely.
And got rid of the stupid movie, and then...
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we still...
But that preceded both Jackie and me, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, because I had worked
that change happened
actually,
before
because they, when I went to go get a health card, it was the same movie I saw 37 years ago, and so they finally really streamlined that part of it, and I think Glenn Savage had actually worked with the staff to implement that with PBS. How did you put it again? Anybody who handles
food handlers, food managers need to have a food handler training card.
So that would be a 7-Eleven and someone serves a hot dog?
They're handling food. They should have the training. If we need to look at that and they don't have a card.
I just throw that out as a, because too often we get calls from folks that don't know exactly what we define as a person that's handling food. So I think that's just something we need to look at the impacts on that part of it, because that's... If that's who it is, then the people need to know, and I have a feeling they probably don't know that they need a card.
Well. Bussers as well.
Bussers as well.
Bussers.
Yeah, people.
People who bus tables.
I used to do that too.
So did I.
So maybe we need to have a discussion about who we really expect, and then so that the industry is aware of it, because I don't want people getting caught off guard, not realizing that they're not supposed to. For example, work cards in the local governments, we got rid of most of them, except for the city of Las Vegas. But you know that. And so we tailored it down to a very narrow group because it really was a money generator, and that was never the attempt in the long run for most people. And when we had the health card discussion, we were trying to pare it down to those that really could impact the health and safety of somebody. And so I think it would be interesting to see who all's contained in that, and then maybe to make a determination on whether or not we went too far in trying to define who's affecting health and safety as far as that's concerned.
If I may, ma'am, we're actually looking at that exact subject right now, and we'll be looking at that over the next 3 or 4 months, exactly that subject.
I wanted to talk about OSHA and its relationship with you. There was a comment that was made in the public hearing about an OSHA problem. What happened at the health district with regard to that?
Can you do that since...
Heather can do that. Lights on and
is it? Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
Heather handled the investigation with OSHA, so I'll have her speak to that.
I apologize. It's been quite a while since I've thought about this issue. We had a very expansive allegations, but only two held out to be true. We had not updated our TB prevention plan in approximately 2 years, so we did that in compliance. most of the other allegations did not end up being true. We had every single spot was had an allegation, and we had
what types of allegations? Maybe that
our fire extinguishers had not been looked at by the fire marshals was the allegation. We looked at every single one of our sites. We found one fire extinguisher that had not been updated by the fire marshal within the last year. It was next to someone's desk. It just had gotten missed. We actually ended up pulling the fire extinguisher because it was not necessary. We had more fire extinguishers in that particular clinic than was even necessary. Another allegation was that the environmental health specialists had not had appropriate confinement training, but under HAZWOPR, which is the training that they all receive, they receive 80 hours and then follow up a 40 hours training. They had that they had in fact been in compliance with that. Hearing conservation, also covered by HAZWOPR for the environmental health specialists, that our janitor staff had not had access to appropriate knowledge about chemicals in case they had, if they got it in their eyes or spills or that, they did have access to that. Our staff had, it just was a matter of showing OSHA all of the places where we had kept this information, and we did have proof and documentation of the training. Janitorial staff not knowing how to use the forklift appropriately, yet we had proof of that training. So it just was more tedious to show them, but I put all that documentation together with the staff's help.
Was that ever shared with the board?
I don't know whether or not it was, but we
did. I don't recall it. This was a couple of years ago, you're saying?
This was approximately last year. It was resolved about around this time in November. We did have to post regarding the TV plan. Oh, and our battery room, that was the other allegation, where our servers are located. The eyewash sink had not been appropriately monitored. So we got the wash basin and we got a documentation that was being monitored on a monthly basis to make sure that the eyewash station worked.
So you'd, rather than using your term, two items were found that were true, I would say two items were found to be validated, perhaps might be a more appropriate term, but what were those two items then?
The eyewash station and the fact that we had not updated our TB prevention plan in 2 years.
I think the board personally should know. And then Heather, since you're there, I was looking back at the employee survey, and I do want some discussion, Dr. Iser, about what are our plans to deal with that rather than dismiss it and make it look like it's just a handful of people that are complaining. Heather, in your email to me, you said, I did the redactions of the employee survey. I redacted names, titles, specific groups of people who have been easily identifiable. I redacted curse words. Finally, I redacted specific employees' performance or conduct. I was able to go online and download the original before you redacted it. There was no place that I found a curse word. So I don't want us to be using language that makes people, that taints the process to some extent, or at least gives the image of being tainted.
I redacted the S word 3 times.
Perhaps my eyes just skipped over that S word, but I still, what are we doing with this? I think today is about making sure, Dr. Iser, that this health district becomes healthy again. And I have a great deal of respect for Noreen as well as Victoria and I forgot the other young lady, because it takes a lot to come up, say whatever it is you want to say in a public forum. After 9 years, we've kind of come back full circle. What I don't want to see is management that becomes defensive rather than saying, okay, maybe we do have an issue that we have to work on and here are the ways that we can work on it. And I don't hear that. I hear that resistance that, oh, it's just them. It's just another group. It's not the nurses. It's that. That needs to stop. And we need to heal ourselves to figure out how, if your employees feel comfortable and happy to come to work, they will work twice as hard for you. And you know that as a manager. I get frustrated when I see the circling of the wagons. You have some talent here, both in management as well as in your employee staff. What are we going to do about making sure that we create the climate and a culture for people to feel comfortable while they're doing their jobs? What I don't want to see is if all of a sudden, Doug has a complaint about solid waste and it gets taken care of because he complained as a board member, or the chair has a complaint about someone in EH and that gets fixed. Arbitrary and capricious
behaviors. If it's good enough to fix it for one person, it's good enough to fix it for everybody, and it ought to be reduced to writing if that's the case. Because what we can't afford to do in health is to hear, oh, in this business, we let you worry, not worry about your demerits for hand washing or whatever it might be, but we let you skate, but we didn't let somebody else skate. If it's really not appropriate, then get rid of it for everybody. If it really is appropriate, then have the guts to stand up to the industry, whoever the industry may be, and say, hey, you know what? We're here to regulate your safety and your health, and therefore this, and this are not going to be waived. You have to come into compliance. We will help you get into compliance. We've been doing the re-education here for 4 or 5 years. Everybody makes it sound like it's a brand new idea, and it isn't a brand new idea. And so creating the culture to make sure that we weren't going in and using a hammer on businesses, that's been the goal of, and I commend you that it continues, but it was the goal before you got here. And so and when we say industry, with no disrespect to the larger industries on the strip, of which I represent a good portion of them, it's about the mediums and the smalls as well. And so I tend to see that people only hear about, and if there's a big hammer for MGM or Caesars or whoever, but not the other folks, you know what, then we have a problem too, because then there's a disparate taking care of that part of it. So I hope today sometime we hear about how are we going to acknowledge that there are workable problems in some of the departments that can actually help change the culture that's here. You have good staff, but let's empower them. If people need better training on internally as well as managerially, then let's do it. Rather than pushing it to the side. I don't want employees feeling that they can't come to people. I don't want to see emails that say, don't share with the commissioner, or I want to check your phone to see if you've talked to a particular commissioner or politician. That's inappropriate. And anybody can talk to me anytime. My cell phone is out there for anybody and everybody as far as that's concerned, including you. I mean, so it creates a fear rather than an empowerment. And so I would like to hear today what your plans are for creating the empowerment versus the fear.
Honestly, you've brought so much stuff up, like Victoria did,
that
it's difficult for me to pick something out, but let me pick out the survey. And you all asked for an update at the next board meeting, which should have been tomorrow.
But it wasn't on the agenda that I saw.
Yes, it was.
It was. Okay. Okay.
And it will be on the agenda for whenever we reschedule it. And our new HR director, I don't think we need to speak to it today. We need the full board to hear what we're doing. But that's what her job is, and she's prepared to do that. So you'll hear that. There is no circling of the wagons. I don't think any of you have heard from me that environmental health frontline staff or anyone else that they're at fault. I just don't think you hear that from management. I think you hear that from the union, that that's what they feel we're doing, but it's not true. I've had, and you have heard from employees, that they fear retribution. There will be no retribution, ever. But I also had to make that promise to employees who want to speak up against what the union is doing. They're afraid of their managers, or truthfully, like that anonymous letter said, of you all taking retribution. I don't know how that would happen, but they are afraid of that. And I've had to promise those employees that I'll protect them from any kind of retribution. It's my job to protect my staff, and I will do that, whether they're for me or against me, honestly.
Yeah, whether they're union or non-union.
That's exactly right.
And with no disrespect, I tend to dismiss anonymous letters. If they don't have the wherewithal to put their name on it, then shame on them as far as that's concerned. But be that as it may. So you're saying that after the discussion on the agenda item, you will have a plan that you will develop with HR and the Labor Committee?
We have a plan that is currently under development, and we've talked to you about that over 2 or 3 other board meetings.
Under
we've given you updates.
With whom?
I'm sorry?
Under development with whom?
With the employees, beginning from the frontline staff all the way up. And you'll hear about it again, but we've told you about this. Shirley Oakley told you about this at least at 2 or 3 other full board meetings. But we're happy to summarize that, and that's what we're prepared to do at the next board meeting.
But telling and doing are very different, so I look forward to that. Telling and doing are very different as far as that's concerned.
Sure.
public health centers, I'm still hearing from North Las Vegas, they're very concerned about the lack of the clinic, the fact that we never really PR'd it, that people didn't even know it was there. And so I promised that I would raise that issue again for them as far as where we locate things, and this is not just you, sometimes we do it in government and our side as well, where you locate, if you don't give anybody the visibility, those types of things, then you wind up justifying. We did it for years in elections, I'll use an example. Oh, the minorities don't turn out to vote, so we won't give them a longer term voting area. Until you have a consistent UPR and they learn about it, you're not going to have that. So the same kind of thing within a clinic mixture. So what are the plans for North Las Vegas in providing assistance for their constituents?
We've had several meetings with North Las Vegas involving Mr. Churchill and Ms. Wood, several meetings. We had another one this week. They are absolutely up to date with what we're talking about. And I'll tell you that what North Las Vegas needs are primary care centers, places that will take Medicaid, and they don't have enough. We don't do that. We don't do primary care, although...
No, we shouldn't. That you're talking about FQs?
FQHCs or any kind of a primary mm-hmm. care. There are health departments that do primary care without being an FQHC, but they go out of business fairly quickly. And we had just had this discussion this week. As far as I can tell, and I'll look to Andy to confirm this, but I think that both of the council folk who were at that meeting are pleased with the progress that we're making, and we've got a plan in place.
Absolutely, and they're gaining...
Sorry.
Andy Glass, Director of Administration. Particularly at this last meeting when we brought in the Nevada Primary Care Association CEO, I think there was a new understanding of what the issues are, not only with what the health department does relative to primary care, but also with the dearth of primary care that exists in this community. We, as the health district, are willing to do to help to solve that issue. And there was new data on, particularly on the locations of primary care facilities, and on top of that was laid the demographic data for North Las Vegas. And we could see that the locations that were originally being requested for us to provide our services were absolutely the wrong locations relative to where the need is within that particular population. So there is a lot of discussion going on. There's a commitment to continue that discussion, and there is a commitment on the part of the district to solve in any way within our resources that we're able to do that. The last thing that we want to do is to make a commitment to put a facility somewhere, just for the sake of putting a facility somewhere. We want to make sure that we're reaching those clients who need that particular type of service that we're offering, and looking at new and different ways of providing services rather than necessarily with just bricks and mortar. I think that we've brought up to the board that we are considering a mobile specialty service
clinic.
And you know, we're actively talking about that. We've included with North Las Vegas, and we've included that within our budget for the coming fiscal year. So
I'm glad to hear about that, especially demographics, because when we reopened the clinic, it should never have been in that place. And so hopefully now we learn from that mistake. Whoever made that decision, I don't even know how that was before any of us were here. Yeah.
And by the way, we're doing this exact same process. We're working with the city of Henderson in looking at how to replace or what we should do when the Henderson lease is up. So this is something that, this is how we work. We work in conjunction with our electeds and other folks to try to look at the best way to provide our resources. One of the things that we've talked about before, and you need to hear probably every other meeting, is that in the long run, we're going to be losing many, perhaps most, of our clinical services grants. We cannot replace those with $8,010. A lot of those grants will be going to FQHCs and community health centers. For example, we've been told quite bluntly that over the next couple of years, the family planning grants will be transitioned to those kinds of facilities. And in some jurisdictions, that happens already. As I've told you, in one of my counties that I worked at, we didn't do any family planning. It was the community health centers who got those grants and did it. Our job isn't necessarily, in fact, I would say most health jurisdictions are getting out of providing any clinical services except for really stopgap. For us, that would be some immunizations. For us, really, really final stopgap would be immunizations and TB. If the federal government wants to transition those grants to other providers than health districts, that's what's going to happen. And that's all under the guise, under the auspices of the Affordable Care Act.
Right, and there may be some modifications that come into play, but I would hope we wouldn't lose our HIV, AIDS, and our family planning dollars as far as
I would hope so too, but we may not in the long run be eligible for those. And that's not due to accreditation. It's due to a change in the focus under the auspices of the Affordable Care Act.
Have we, because of the closing of the culinary, what was the federal program that they were doing the insurance, and they're closing this month?
I don't know.
Under Obamacare.
Nevada Health
Co-op. Yeah, the Health Co-op. Do we have any role in that? Is there any
Not
impact?
Really.
Okay, because those
really.
Folks are going to be uninsured, apparently, they're going to be picked up someplace else, and I just don't know what that.
Yeah, one of the things that Nancy Hook, who is this executive director of the Primary Care Association, does is to monitor, and she did this for us, where the Medicaid enrollees are, where the both private and not-for-profit primary care groups are, and we looked at all of those on a map, and what is the disparity? And the disparity is not in necessarily immunizations, although I think I could stretch it that it probably there would be some, but it's in the access to primary care. And that's something that we've been trying to tell North Las Vegas, and they understand that that's not something we can really help them with, except we'll help to facilitate meetings. So 3 months ago, we took the executive director from First Med?
Correct.
First Med up there to meet, this was before Mr. Churchill was in, to meet Ms. Woods to talk about can they find a way to incentivize each other to move up there. North Las Vegas did incentivize another group, Searchlight, Dr. Nagy's group, to locate up there, but he has a clinic every other week.
And then we're also working with First Person.
And we're also working with First Person, but I'm saying we're trying to get community health centers or primary care association, primary care organizations to move up there because that's what they need. That's what the valley needs. And that's what we lack. I think Dr. Nimick will tell you that we lack family practitioners. We lack internists. We lack pediatricians. But the Affordable Care Act should incentivize residency programs to grow and to get
that
more.
That and the School of Medicine will help.
That will help too. But our role is really in trying to connect those dots with the jurisdictions. North Las Vegas does have a lot of underserved Medicaid clients, but that's not something we can really help with. But we can help by bringing First Med, which is a community health center up there, and First Person, which wants to be a community health center. They're in the process
of their demonstration.
They're in their demonstration period. Try to talk to them, and we're trying to talk to them as well up there. And then Dr. Nagy's group, which is Searchlight, which was incentivized.
He's been there, but right. There's alternate hours.
Did get a grant for community health center start in Henderson. I don't know why he didn't apply for North Las Vegas. I can tell you that Anita is not very happy that he didn't. But that's where our role fits in, is to try to assure care, not provide it directly ourselves.
Others have questions, but I also can talk about this.
If I may, do you all have any suggestions? Do you all have any questions related to that before we move on?
Nope.
Okay, thank you. Talk about the sex trade position.
Yeah, this was an interview that I had about adult immunizations. And at the end of the interview, I can't remember the name of the reporter now, but he asked me if I could get immunizations for adults, which are the ones that I would like to have? And I said, STDs and HIV. I don't think there's a health person in this country who wouldn't agree with me on that, despite the fact that they may be a specialized gastroenterologist or a specialized nephrologist. I think probably all of us would agree with that. And he said, well, what alternatives do you have? And I had talked to one of the board members about this issue about decriminalizing sex trade, and I can also tell you that the Nevada State Medical Association and the Clark County Medical Society has been talking about legislation to do that. This was all in the back of the mind when I actually didn't say I'm going to go to the legislature. I did not say that. But I said that decriminalization of the sex trade would be helpful. If you look at, I know, Mr. Devine, you've seen, you've looked at, and you've asked us about chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis. If you look at those statistics, not just here, but across the country, that's one of the ways that is arguably a way to address the issue. In those counties that do have legalized prostitution, you see virtually, you really see a much better environment, both for the women, and I think there was at one time a man who worked in that. You see a much better working environment for them, and they get tested for STDs and HIV once
a week.
Yeah, and
the press doesn't always get stuff straight, so I'm trying to be out there.
That's the nuance.
Right, but the nuance was that you wanted to promote it, and I would just hope that we have that conversation as a board, because the issue of human trafficking came up separate from the issue of the STDs, and that was, we have a large community group that are really working on trying to minimize the human trafficking part of it. And so it got tainted seeing, oh, the chief health officer is calling for legalizing prostitution.
Oh, it shouldn't taint that.
Yeah, I understand. But that's the reality of what we have.
And we did work, when I was up in Washoe County, we worked with the HOPES Clinic. Do you know that clinic? The HOPES Clinic started out as an HIV intervention clinic, and they have now, then they started providing services to mostly women, but people in the virtually all are women, as we all know. And we worked in conjunction with them, along with Trudy Larson, Dr. Larson, who is the...
I know Dr. Larson.
She is the dean of the School of Community Health Sciences, and I can't remember his name now, but a faculty member from the Department of Internal Medicine up at UNR. And we worked at and looked at various alternatives for how can we access, in particular to these women, for a variety of reasons. One is for obvious STD, HIV, diagnosis and treatment. Another one is pregnancy prevention. A third one is to start to work with them to look at alternatives to what they're currently doing, providing educational opportunities and a variety of other things. So that was all part of the context of what was lost in that article. And believe me, I do believe in decriminalization of the sex trade for all of these reasons. And
it came across, and I went, oh God, okay. My human trafficking committee was on the phone going crazy. So
Well, again, it's the nuance that you don't see from the discussion we had.
Correct.
And the things swirling through my mind as I'm getting interviewed.
Okay, final kind of comment is looking at our mission values, vision and values, the integrity component works both ways. And I just, regardless of what we do, I think we have to favor fairness, honesty in order to consistently apply our codes, rules, and regulations, and that means to management, to staff, as well as the industry that we're regulating in. And so I think that that's got to be of utmost importance so that we don't get the he said, she said, or this one got taken care of because they were the louder barker, and whatever happens as far as that's concerned. So our because the budget was driven and a decision was made to do it in 3 years, we have really cut a lot of staff. And you're short people. You've had a lot of resignations.
We haven't cut
that
much staff, honestly.
Enough. You didn't furlough like a lot of our folks did and all that part of it. But there's an impact on the number of supervisors, inspectors, the number of nurses. There's just a different thing that we have to acknowledge and say, you know what, maybe we take 2 years to do it. The board should have that kind of a conversation rather than just saying my goal is, and that shame on us if that's the way it worked or didn't work as far as that's concerned. But we have to be sensitive that we have a community that's a 24-hour town that needs to have accommodations that are made. I mean, I think we should still do double schedules in some cases in government as well. There should be Saturdays that serve, you know, the business community, those types of things, so that we're acknowledging that not everything, and you can do that through negotiations any way, shape, or form. I mean, it's not an inhibitor of that part of it.
We agree.
So I hope we can get past some of the feelings that are here. I'm going to be very, well, are you practicing in California or do you just maintain an office in California?
I'm sorry. I have a license in California. I don't see patients in California. I don't have a practice there. I heard that was a rumor that the union was spreading
union
about me.
The union didn't bring this up to me, actually. I Googled you myself.
And you saw that I have a practice?
I have you in Bernal Heights, California. There's an office.
I have a house there. That's where my house is.
So that's why I asked that director over, because you know what? I don't deal in rumors.
Why wouldn't you call me and ask me that in person rather than bring it up in a public meeting?
Because I Googled this morning.
You still could have called me. It's this, if I may, and I'm, this is the problem that I see in a lot of our interactions, is that the union brings up allegations that many of you don't believe, many of you do believe, but by encouraging those, that's what causes strife, and that's what causes morale problems here. That question, I think, causes morale problems here. Of course, I have a house in Bernal Heights. It's 154 Gate Street. And I go there on occasion on weekends and long weekends. I haven't been there in a month, but I have a house there. I don't even have tenants there. I don't have housemates. It lies vacant when I'm not there, although I do have guests that come in from out of town, like my best friend from medical school and his wife are coming in first part of August, and I just give them the key to go use it. No, I don't have a practice anywhere.
And my question is quite legitimate. I didn't care whether you lived there or not or had that. But you know what? When I Google something, I check on people in my own departments, because I found somebody that we had hired that had never changed their address as far as that's concerned. They have an obligation in Nevada to do that. So I'm honestly asking you up front to put the rest the rumors, and it was not the union that came to me. So don't assume always that it's the union that raised those issues.
I do know it was the union through which I heard it.
You may have heard a separate thing.
That's how I heard it. I can't tell you how you heard it. I have not had a practice since a practice where I saw private patients since 1984.
All I ask is the simple question.
Sure. Yes, I have seen patients. And that's always been due to my work-related activities.
Thank you.
I don't have separate malpractice. None of that. Now, I did when I was in residency, but that was before 1984.
I would imagine, Thank you.
Are there other rumors that you have or other people may have?
I'll call you with them, but you know what?
I would appreciate you do that.
This one I did this morning, and so
this doesn't seem like an appropriate place to bring forward.
It's not an inappropriate place.
I think it is, but...
Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree.
Committee members? Any questions? Thank you for the report of accomplishments.
Oh, may I, sir?
Uh-huh.
May I ask Ms. Rezatar, how many staff do you have now compared to 2 years ago? The same?
Ms. Rezatar, would you get up to the microphone?
Because I want to put to rest that rumor, too. We have, I think, more employees now than we did before the layoffs.
Ma'am, I have on staff, Jackie Rezatar, Director of Environmental Health. I have on staff 146.
Do you know how many there were?
And we are allocated 163. And I don't know how many we had before with my previous manager. However, if I may add, we have plenty of staff. We just don't maximize the way we utilize our staff in environmental health. If everybody was utilized in the same capacity, we would have more than enough to service and provide extra service to the community.
In nursing, it's the same thing. I think we have more people now due to the grants than what we had before the layoffs. I believe in nursing we had two layoffs, right? Just a yes or no. We only had two layoffs, and I think that with Healthy Start and some other things, we have more employees there and more nursing staff than what we had before. Where we are, and Dr. Lockett, I think the same thing is true there, because we didn't have any layoffs in community health. And where we did have most of the layoffs is in administration, mostly in finance.
I think it was like 70% of the layoffs came in administration.
And so that was in HR, maintenance,
janitorial staff,
and HR, and health cards. So we're not less prepared than we were 2 years ago or before I got here. And I'm sorry to interrupt you. But
Sharon Huber McCoy, I can interpret your head nod or shake. That is information in the CAFR historically, right?
It's in the budget.
It's in the budget as well? But that's budgeted positions. Does the CAFR have the actual positions?
I would have to look at, but there are positions in the CAFR, yes.
And while you weren't here during the layoffs, am I roughly correct?
There were.
Sorry.
Perhaps. perhaps you could say what rumor you're talking about, because I didn't ask the question.
Well, the rumor that we are less prepared, you referred to this in your comments, that we're less prepared because we don't have enough environmental health staff, we don't have enough staff to respond.
Sharon McCoy Huber, Financial Services Manager. Before the layoffs, there were 562 positions budgeted. When they did the layoffs, probably after the layoffs, there were 499 positions. So that shows positions that were laid off was 63 positions. Of those 63 positions, 48 of them were vacant. Since that time, this last year, we eliminated 13 more positions, but those were also vacant positions. There were some positions, and then some of those people that were laid off have also come back to the health district due to attrition when we were hiring new positions. So as far as I could tell, the majority of all the positions that were eliminated were vacant positions that weren't filled currently. And what we started doing is no longer budgeting for those vacant positions.
So you don't build a surplus then?
Correct.
In reality. So,
correct.
So it maybe for the board meeting, we could have the in the director of clinics and nursing for on your flow chart, how many people are there and were there and are still needed? Because there may be some that you've identified that may have been set up as a request that may no longer be needed for that particular area, but there may be a different area that now are needed based on growth, community growth.
That's a much broader discussion. You know, we are the least funded agency in the state, almost in the country in terms of general fund. So we, about three quarters of our budget comes from fees, and grants.
Right.
And only about a quarter of our budget comes from $8-10 dollars or tax dollars.
Right. We have approximately $65 million budget. $18 million of it is taxes. And then all the rest is fees and grants. Grants are about $18 million also currently, which is growing. And then fees is about $21 million.
Right, sure. You get impacted because we've had our, even though our property tax is slightly upticking, it's not enough to really generate any
right.
revenue. And then the abatements that have come into play have really affected everybody.
So that's the broader item. No, we don't have enough personnel. We can't meet the needs here, and that's because we don't have the funding to do it. And I think that the jurisdictions may or may not have just wanted to go to the legislature to increase that property tax cap. We would have been floated along with that, if, but it didn't happen. And being the least funded organization almost in the country, I can't expand beyond what my resources allow me to do. Would I hire more nursing staff to do more immunizations in more areas? You can answer that.
Yeah.
Would I hire more environmental health staff so we can start to do more than one routine inspection a year? Of course I would. Dr. Lockett, would I hire, we're down one person in EMS and trauma systems. You know I would hire a person there if I had the funds to do it. And more epidemiologists. Everywhere we can use more, we just don't have the funding to do it. And that's a reality that you all know about, but we all need to face as we go forward.
I've actually got a question related to something that Jackie said about we having enough inspection staff. You and I had a conversation several months ago on the phone about, go ahead.
Although, if I may, this is my evaluation.
But it was brought up
okay.
that we have staffing, so I
just want to be careful how we proceed.
You'd mentioned to me that the average inspector nationwide handles about 1,000 inspections on an annual basis. We're doing about 1,500.
Jackie Resitar, Director of Environmental Health. According to the FDA food code, the standard is 250 permits or inspections per inspector. Most of my inspectors have at least 400 to 500 inspections. And budgetary-wise, since we do not have the funds to hire at least 20 more, I would love to have 20 more inspectors. That's great. But but all of us are REHS qualified, and I'd like to use all of my staff to be able to conduct food inspections. We do have the talent to do this, and that's how I can maximize while we're under a budget constraint in order to serve the public better.
Do they all have the appropriate training? I made to do it, because that was one of the complaints that I kept hearing time and time again, and I was going to discuss with you offline about this, but that's one of the things that got back to me.
And in support of Dr. Iser and the budget, we do have an amazing training staff, and yes, we do have the ability to train our staff to do inspections. There are more complicated inspections, but for risk one and risk two category-based inspections, we can utilize our entire staff of 146 to get that accomplished, and that will take the pressure off of food ops at the moment.
How many of those 146 are going to want to go out and do inspection work?
All of them, because they are outstanding. They just need to be empowered and have the confidence to go and complete the work.
That's part. And I think the standard is, if I can actually stay there, the standard really is to try to do two routine inspections a year, and I don't think I've been in a jurisdiction that has the staff to do that. I think that in all of my jurisdictions, we get by with about one, which is the absolute minimum, I think, under state law that we can do. That's not as good as what I think we should be doing. If I could hire 20, 30, 40 more environmental health staff, I would do that. We did put into the budget hiring 5 or 10.
5 to 7.
New ones this year.
I do want 10. I'm pushing for 10.
Yeah, and if we can do it, we'll do it.
One of the other things, I know we've heard people say from the union, we've heard comments, I've actually had people from non-union come to me and say, I'm afraid of the union, people who I've known for a long time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I think both sides, nobody has come yet to give me proof on either side. And so I tend to try to discount a lot of this. I'm not going to deal in innuendo and whatnot. Give me hard proof, and I will jump all over either side. What I do want this group to hear is what happened in this building the day after our last board meeting, which angered me to no extent. Those signs never put up.
Do you want to describe those?
I didn't personally see them, but I had enough people call me about them. And you and I spoke about last week. You said you dealt with it, but I'd like the rest of the board to know the other side, because we've all been contacted by the union side. I'm not against the union. I'm not for the employees. I want both sides to work this out, and we have a great district that we can beat. But this rhetoric that's going on both sides has got to stop, and that's where we need the leadership to do that.
And that's where I need the leadership to help me do that.
But anyway, Jack, I guess since the signs impacted you directly, I'm sure you'd like to leave.
Did you see those
signs? I don't think you saw
them. Yes, sir, I saw them, and I have one on my desk as we speak as a reminder that I'm going to hold strong and support Dr. Iser the best that I can.
Okay.
Yeah, they were very inappropriate about her put up by employees in this building. And they were put up on the walls and whatnot in this building. Unacceptable behavior from anybody.
I think we're straying, Annette was going to speak up, I think we're straying a little bit far from my evaluation.
Yes.
I appreciate the comments, I must say that I do.
But the evaluation is we need to resolve this issue and get going. And this has been dragging on for a long time. And it's time.
All right, so are there any additional comments, board members, on 3 sub 3?
I'll make comments. I'm just going to kind of review what some of my comments were last year, just to give some perspective on this. I still hate this public process because I don't think it's the most effective at resolving the issues, and I think people sometimes hold back, but it is what it is, and so I still have generally positive reviews for Dr. Iser, like I did last year. I get a little bit of an inside track, or I did at least, because I was the chair of the board, and Bob's going to see that more as he gets to work with Dr. Iser over the next year. And just see all the issues that he has to deal with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I'm not here with him on a day-to-day basis, but I got to meet with them a lot, work with them a lot through the legislature and through other aspects. And so I think I have a unique perspective to offer on what he goes through and what he does. He and I don't agree on everything. When I disagree with him, I tell it to him to his face, and he responds, and we work it out. That's just part of the process. That I would do it differently if I were in his shoes. I'd probably do it worse if I were in his shoes because I don't have the training. But it's a different worldview that we have, or a different way of approaching things. And you know, you have to allow the person that's in that position to bring their own worldview and their own experience and their own training and whatever they bring to the table to deal with the issues that face them. And that's what Dr. Iser does, and I think he does a remarkable job of doing that. So some of the things I said last year are that I think he was sincere and genuine, wants to have good employee relations. I never sensed any retaliation on his part. I counseled him in that meeting last year not to take these things personally. It's easy to do that in a public forum. It's easy to start throwing, doing name calling and things like that. It needs to be professional. But my comment last year was, even if one person thinks there's morale issues with the employees, then that's enough reason to make it a priority. And you do, in your goals, acknowledge that we still have morale issues that you're trying to address. I don't think you're ever going to have an organization of this size that doesn't have morale issues. And if you told me that we have zero morale issues, then I would look at you and say, you know, you better think again, because any organization is going to have morale issues. And I would give you the same counsel again this year that, you know, if it's two people that are having issues, if it's one person, if it's 100 people, it's still something we need to have an ongoing process. We need to find better ways to address that, and we should. I made the comment that I was pleased with the county settlement. That's in the past. I think we're developing more and more and better relations with the county. I think Victoria acknowledged that in her public comments at the start, not only with the county, but you know, that is one of your strengths, that your ability to reach out to the community and develop those relations. And, you know, we have lots of letters here from medical providers, hospitals, various departments of the county commending you for what you've done there. So I concur with Victoria on that. That is one of your strengths. And encourage you to continue doing that, because the image of the health district out there in the community is important. If people don't have confidence that we're doing the right thing, if they don't think they can work with us, then we're not going to accomplish what we need to accomplish. I said you had made strides in balancing the budget. We were no longer deficit spending. I've seen that continue this last year as well, and I know it's going to continue because we're not out of the woods yet. We were all surprised by what we saw, I think, when you came in and revealed that to us, and we're working on it. It's not always an easy decision when you have to make cuts or make changes internally that, you know, people, whenever somebody sees a change, it's hard. We're all used to doing our daily routines, and I'm not saying that every one of your changes, because I don't know what they all are perfect or that they couldn't be done differently. I'm sure there's ways you can improve that, but I think that we've done a fantastic job. Not just you, but it goes down to the department heads, it filters down to all the employees, because you've had to ask them to buy into it, and to the extent they have. I mean, you know, that they participated in that process, and kudos to them for that. We hadn't yet acquired a new facility last year at this time. We were working on it. And I know you worked hard over that prior year to do that, and now we have. And now we're building it, and we're going to have a new home, and that's going to be huge for the health district. So that's a big feather in your cap. And again, when I'm talking about you, I'm talking about everybody. Absolutely. As you acknowledged at the start. It doesn't happen by just one person. You take the credit for what everybody does, because it all comes back to you. You also take the flack when it comes back from everybody else as well, and that's part of the territory. But it's huge for the district to have a new facility. And so I encourage you to turn the positive, or the negatives, the criticisms, into positives. And would still encourage you to do that.
Thank you.
Some of your goals are, and that you've made some strides in this year, I feel like, are the billing systems, the clinical and the lab. We're continuing to refine our fees structure in various levels. We've done a good job of that. Where the accreditation process, I think, is another big thing for the district that we're working very hard on. And I think, you know, again, you get the credit for other people's work on that, but, you know, it needs to be pointed out that that's the case. In addition to the building, there's the long-term leases. We've moved our leases around. I know that, you know, North Las Vegas isn't completely happy about everything that's going on there, but I do believe you're working hard with them to try to find the right solution there. And at the end of the day, when we're in our new building and we have these leases in place, we're going to save hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Millions.
Maybe millions a year. Certainly over time, we're going to save that much. That's going to be great for everybody. Then we can start turning around and allocating those funds to programs and improvements there. So that's huge. And I won't get into all the, you know, the details that you gave credit to the departments. There's a lot in there, too, that you absolutely can take credit for. We're not 100% perfect on all of those things, but we're working towards them. I have met also with SEIU and the union representatives and Victoria and others. I'm actually glad about that they've come to me and other board members and started to talk about the issue. During my tenure for 2 years as the board chair, that never happened. And it wasn't that I didn't have an open door policy. It just didn't for whatever reason. I hope it wasn't because they were afraid to come to me. I don't like to portray that. I know that sometimes there's just assumptions that are made on both sides, and it's a hard process to come forward for employees that have issues. And it's going to still be a hard process because nobody really likes to come forward and say, oh, this is, you know, somebody did this to me, because they're afraid of how that might impact their livelihood and their day-to-day job. And that's legitimate. I mean, we have to acknowledge that fear and that concern, because all of us, if put in that position, would have difficulties doing it. But I am glad they're coming to me, because I think it's going to be make this process better. Do I have all the solutions for them? No. Is the board the gatekeeper of that? Is it our job to micromanage the day-to-day? No, but hopefully this will facilitate better processes. And Victoria sent out an email to the board members today. I'm not going to get into the details on that, but she asked for greater transparency, greater communication, and respect for their contract. And again, if you talk about communication, that is the one problem that we're always going to face in a public context. There is no government entity, there's no government body, there is no quasi-government body out there where you can improve communications. It's always going to be a challenge. It's a challenge for me to communicate with my constituents. It's a challenge for me to communicate with my staff. It's a challenge for staff to communicate with the employees. It is always going to be a problem. And absolutely, you know, there are ways we can improve that. I don't know the details of how we can improve that, but we need to find the ways to improve that. And I've asked the union representatives face-to-face to keep this on a professional level. They've given me their word that they're going to do that. And so I would encourage you, as the leader, the manager, to try to find ways to make that happen. In your head, you might say, well, I've done this and I've done that, and we have, you know, provided better staff meetings or whatever. I don't really care about that. I don't even want you to respond to it. The message I want to send is I think there are always going to be ways we can improve that, and we need to find those ways, and you may need to dig deep, and it may take some dialogue. And as we do that, there will be more transparency as a result. I mean, it just, you know, those two go hand in hand together. The one thing that Victoria brought out in her respect for contract that struck me as pertinent to this meeting was, you know, the grievances and arbitration take a long time. They're not cost effective. Usually they have a winner and a loser. Finding a quick win-win seems better to her. I agree with that. I mean, we can create processes, and we should. We can bring in external auditors if we need to, and we can explore that possibility. But those are dollar-costing processes. Those are time-consuming processes. The better way to resolve issues is face-to-face, some kind of internal process where somebody that has a grievance doesn't have to file a formal grievance first, or doesn't have to file a lawsuit, or doesn't have to file a formal arbitration. I'm an attorney. I live in that business. I make my living by keeping people out of those processes because they are time-consuming. They are super costly. They can last years and years. They are emotionally draining. And when you want to fight on principle, or you want to do this just because you can, there are no winners at the end of the day. And I say that to my clients every day. I will say that to you. I will say that to the union. I will say that to the employees. I will say that to anybody who wants to ask. So I'm in favor of that particular point that she makes. I don't know the exact details, but we should find a way where employees with grievances can come and where it's more informal. There's no fear of retaliation. If we have to get a neutral third party to facilitate that, I'm okay with that. But that's a really good point. And so let's work on it. Let's find a way to do that because, you know, as Doug said, as I'm sure everyone on the board would say, we want to mend fences if there are fences to be mended. We want to find ways to have good relations. I've been here long enough to see the district in a position at certain times where it's devolved into nothing more than name calling and things like that. And we don't do the business of the district. We don't act as civil servants when it devolves to that because we're focusing too much on these other issues. So, do I know all the details? No. You know, the union reps in Victoria have said to my face that it's going to be a process and it's going to take time, and I agree with that. I mean, they can't get me all the details all at once, and I'm not really the one that they need to get the details. It's all of us. It's all of you. But collectively, we need to work together to find a better process. And again, I don't think you need to respond to this. This isn't a criticism of you directly, as much as it is a criticism or an observation about just the nature of the beast that we're dealing with here. And so I've spoken long enough, but I really would like to see that happen one way or the other. Everybody's going to have to put the past behind them and give everybody a blank slate, a new chance, a new beginning. I'm going to ask that of the union. I'm going to ask that you do that on your side. You can't focus on the future if you're focused on what happened in the past. And if you carry that poison inside of you on either side, it's not going to be healthy. It's counterproductive. So that is my main goal for you that I would like to see happen. But otherwise, I think that you're working hard. The district's making great strides. I've mentioned a lot of things that you've done well. And I hope that you would continue with us and continue working hard and finding ways to continue improving the district.
Additional comments, committee members?
I've got two brief ones.
Fire away.
Could you? So I can hear. I didn't wear my hearing aids today.
I want you to know how much I appreciate the work you have done. I, better than maybe most up here being private industry, know how difficult it is to come into a situation and affect cultural change. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. It's a long, it's a painful process. It's difficult on both sides. But eventually we all get through it if everybody works together on it. The
strides you've made in improving the budget are outstanding. Again, I'm a financial controller. I look at numbers. The balance, if we didn't have a balanced budget, this organization wouldn't be here. You can't live on deficit spending. The challenges I see for you are obviously some of the morale issues, some of the personnel issues, and I think those are accomplishable. I don't personally believe that people are being targeted as much as they think they're being targeted. Business data that I've heard a little bit from both sides, so I think those things may be kind of even out. But like I said, overall, I'm very pleased, and I do love the carrot first, then the stick approach. Being the only person on the board who's ever been audited by the health district, I can tell you the stick is no fun at all when that's the only method that's used. And in fact, that's the reason that I sit here now, was because I didn't like the stick method only. And I think the way you handle it now is great.
Thank you.
Give them the incentive to do it. If they don't, then go back them upside the head a couple times.
That's what the stick is for.
But I do want to say, and I heard this time and time again from people, uniform enforcement. I don't care if they're little or mega. Everybody gets treated the same. Everybody's held to the same standards. And that, I think, is absolutely imperative. And I think that our inspectors need to be trained in those same standards. And I know everybody has their own little twist on things. I've seen that personally. But on stuff that can close business, cause demerits, or whatever the new term is, I want to make sure we're doing this consistently across the board. I think you find a lot of your problems will go away when people don't feel they're being picked on.
May I respond to that? We do have a training unit, as you know, within environmental health, and we have gotten some grants to look at that uniformity, and we've talked about this with the board I don't know how many times over the last 2 years. The goal is to do a risk-based assessment, and let's focus in on food because that's the majority of the organizations that we regulate. The goal is to get that consistency in our inspectors who go in, and that's what the training unit is designed to do and why we have gotten the grants from FDA to do this training. Without that consistent level of training, we can't expect consistency out of our inspectors. And do you just have a number of inspectors who have gone through that retraining process?
My goal by the end of the year was 75%. We have at least 35 to 40 percent completed, and we do have a strategy how we're completing this.
So that's where we're heading, and that's my commitment. I wouldn't put that in as a goal because we're going to do that whether you put it in as a goal for me or not. But that's what we're doing. Just like I wouldn't ask you to put a goal for me to resolve the issue with North Las Vegas. We're going to do that whether you put it in as a goal or not, because that's my job. That's our job to do.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
That's my city, so.
Yeah.
Dr. Mamick?
A lot of what we don't hear is good news. You know, we don't hear about massive TB outbreaks and HIV infections that are spreading. And, this is a testimonial to the fine work that the health district does, not just you, but everyone else who works here. My mother was a union organizer with the sheet metal workers. I was a member of SEIU 250, and I'm sympathetic to union issues, but I think it's important that the union is there to organize and not to demonize, and hopefully there'll be a better working relationship moving forward between administration and the SEIU.
I agree, and just to comment back, I've said this to the board before. My mother was a steward with the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, and if you know the history of union work in this country, it's one of the oldest, most respected unions, in my opinion, in this country, and maybe not in the world, but certainly in this country. I grew up with my mother as a union steward. My father, I can't remember his union, but he was a union member too. I'm from Missouri, which at that point was not a right-to-work state. And that's my background. It's that blue-collar background. My mother worked in sweatshops. I remember that. in Kansas City where there wasn't air conditioning. And if you think air conditioning is important here, go to Kansas City where the humidity is 80% and the temperature may only be 85, but it feels much worse. That's what a sweatshop is about. I have always had my personal respect for unions. And that's why it's surprising to me, honestly, that we seem to be, if not at an impasse, at some sort of an issue. Because wherever I've been before, including Washoe County, the employees, the union, has always supported me. I have no idea. I can't begin to tell you where things went sideways. I think they were sideways when I got here, and I think they've sort of continued that way. I think what I'm looking forward to is when we can, next calendar year, do another evaluation after we've moved into the building, when budgets are better, stable, maybe not better. And let's see how the employees respond to that then. That's my goal. That's what I'd like to see. And that'll happen before my next evaluation period, I believe. Isn't that correct, Andy?
Correct.
Yep.
It better.
Uh-oh.
It will.
Nothing subtle about that.
Yep. Okay. Let's move on to agenda item 3. So 4, approved recommendations to be made at the Southern Nevada Health District Board of Health meeting. I guess no longer September 24th, but at the next meeting of the full board, regarding the annual review. Before you, you have a proposed second amendment to the Chief Health Officer Employment Agreement. It essentially modifies the language to synchronize with the changes in state law, extends the contract to September 22nd, 2017, which is 1 year longer than we had initially agreed, and increases compensation, maybe decreases, I don't know, because I don't know what the old one was, to 246,897.39. How does that compare with current?
I added 2.5% to what was in the
2.5%
increase.
Right. And I believe that, and Annette and I talked about this after I saw the amendment, is that everyone who is not topped out on the scale, and as you recall, I came in at a reduced salary compared to Dr. Nadal and Dr. Sands, so I'm not topped out on the scale. And Annette put that in there. I'm happy to give it up. I'm happy to take it. I've got grandchildren I'm saving up for, too, just like some of you are. But it's up to you.
If anyone has comments, make them now. Otherwise, I would accept a motion to approve the proposed second amendment and forward our recommendation to the board.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion, got a second. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No opposition. And we will advance that to the full board at its next meeting when that happens. Okay, that brings us to agenda item 4, public comment, a period devoted to comments by the general public on any old topic at all, although it should be relevant to the board's jurisdiction. No action can be taken upon any matter raised under this item unless the matter itself has been agendized at a future meeting. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Please step up to the speaker's podium, clearly state your name and address, spell your last name for the record. Any member of the board can ask for a majority vote of the board to extend your time beyond 5 minutes, or I may do this as chairman. Welcome.
Thank you. Again, my name is Ellen Spears, S-P-E-A-R-S. I was actually going to come talk now and not earlier, but I felt this tug of war kind of starting, and I don't think that's anybody's agenda is to pull. We want to resolve issues. But the thing I was going to talk today about was the budget. It's been a big concern of mine. Especially when the resources, the human resources, are asked to adjust, to work their weekends, to do all this extra work because these positions aren't filled, as Dr. Eisner made mention. We don't have the funds to add more staff. That I think we've all agreed on. But when raises are being given at 2.5%, for somebody that's already making almost, you know, if you put the retirement and all that together, that's almost $500,000. When this person gets raises over
need the hard worker that's now has, you know, nervous disorders and stress put on from the physical job we do. That part concerns me. We haven't had a raise in 6 years, but yet this leader has had 2 raises in the last 2 years, this last recommendation, 5% raise. That I don't think is equitable, and I recommend to this hearing board that this recommendation of raises not be approved until the human resources are taken care of, and that's part of the human resources issue, is equity. Government should have equity. If we're not getting raises, then neither should the leaders. It should be equitable. That's what the human resources are crying about. The respect, the equity, the basic resolution of difficulties. So we'd like to see honor and good human ethics be funneled from the top down, not pushed from the bottom up. And that's all I wanted to say today, but thank you for listening.
That's what I was going to say.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I'm just going to real quick just piggyback on what Ellen said. Because Dr. Eicher doesn't understand kind of where things went wrong. And I can tell you the exact date. It was 6/25/2014 in the all-hands meeting we had that day. And one of the things that he did, and he's not wrong in doing this, is asking for a shared responsibility between the employees, the union, and everybody to do the cuts. This was right during the contract when we were working on the economic portion of it. And we did our fair share. Probably the number one complaint I ever heard was when last year Dr. Eicher got a raise, which was right after we had signed a contract where we gave up a lot of things. And so I know right now that, and I'm not saying don't give Dr. Eicher a raise. I would actually ask Dr. Eicher to turn down the raise if he gets one. Just in the same vein that you talk to us about trying to keep the finances of the district under control, I think that's appropriate right now. That's it.
Anybody else?
If I may, it's up to you.
Okay. Any additional public comment? Okay, then this meeting is adjourned.
Got that.